This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. Also, help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day by becoming a Trek FM patron through Patreon. Get access to exclusive content and become part of the team. You'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every single week, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, I noticed you've cleaned your desk off a little bit there, but I see something really interesting on it. Is that a 1951 Willie Mays baseball card?
It really is, Chris. I was so excited. I was in the city, and I found this great little baseball card shop. That right there in the window, I just knew I had to have it, was that Willie Mays rookie card. It just is beautiful.
Well, Matthew, I'm just curious now, you know. I didn't know you had that kind of money lying around. That's worth about 20 grand.
Oh, Chris, just put it on a credit card. That's what Americans do.
All right. Well, we're talking about baseball cards today because our topic is going to be one that was suggested by listener Greg Mollenby, who said you guys should do a commentary for In the Cards. Now, Matthew, I don't know if you're like me, but when I first heard that, I thought, I don't know if I want to do a commentary on that episode because I don't really have fond memories of In the Cards. I remember it as this kind of silly episode where Jake and Nog run around the station trying to get a baseball card for Sisko, and then Wayoon shows up at the end. And so I haven't watched it in quite a long while, but we decided to do it. You said you thought that would be a great idea. I watched it again to prepare and actually found that I kind of like this episode now.
You know, Chris, I was the same way. You know, I thought, oh man, it's a Jake episode. And we all know how we kind of feel about Jake here. I like him more than you do, but on a whole, you know, if Jake's going to be the centerpiece of the episode.
I've come to like him a lot more since we've been doing the show, though.
Yeah. And this episode, you know, centering around Jake and Nog and their adventures of trying to procure this baseball card for Captain Sisko, who is seriously worried about the Dominion threat and what's going to happen. I really liked this mainly because it was a really funny and kind of fun episode with a lot of like terror surrounding it. I mean, you know, you just have the weight of the Dominion kind of sitting on everybody's shoulders in this episode. And then this goofiness that was going on, I thought was really great. And of course the end message of the episode itself, mm-hmm. being, you know, that even in the darkest times, the light comes when we band together and we remember the small things in life that make life worth living, and just really, really enjoyed it. So I'm with you, Chris. I'm excited to be going through this commentary with you, kind of talking through this episode.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun experience. And I always like it when we pick an episode that I wasn't fond of over the years and I find something new in it. So thanks, Greg, for recommending this topic for us today. And we'll head on into the commentary. So everyone, if you want to get your DVD or your Netflix set, however you watch DS9, get that ready. And by the way, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh no, it's a commentary, I'm not at home, go ahead and listen. Matthew and I, we make these like regular discussions, so you'll be able to listen all the way through, even if you're not in front of your TV. But if you are in front of your TV, then listen along as the episode plays. So if you're all set here, I'll give you a countdown and we'll hit play. In 3, 2, 1, play.
Chris, you know, it took Picard till the very end of the series to spend an evening with his, you know, senior crew. Mm-hmm. I always love that Captain Sisko does this. You know, he has people over to his quarters and, you know, he invites them to dinner. You know, he cooks because that's what Sisko likes to do. So I really enjoyed the opening of this episode with the fact that everybody is sitting around the table there in the Sisko home, having a what looked like a fantastic meal and now just enjoying a nice nightcap.
Well, fantastic meal, nice nightcap, but of course it's very solemn because they're talking about things that are happening and they're kind of down about it. But at the same time, it ties in well to the theme of the episode, which is family. You know, Jake wants to do something nice for his father. They have this great family bond. And I think what you're saying is true with Sisko, especially more so than what we saw with Picard, that with Sisko, his crew is like a family to him. So he is having them all over like this.
That, Chris, in the background, every once in a while, you just notice that there's somebody standing there, you know, it randomly staring at the wall like he's been put in the corner. But no, Worf hasn't been put in the corner. He's just enjoying some, you know, African art on the wall because he doesn't want to be part of the conversation, I guess.
Right. Yeah. He's there, but he's not having to really get into the mix too much.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I really like too, you can tell.
He's just staring at it back there, isn't he?
Yeah. He's literally just staring at the wall. It's fantastic. And Sisko even has to remind him, Mr. Worf, it's over. Everybody's left. You're free to go.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, goodness.
That's great. Don't bother. Yeah, you know, every time I think about like a Jake and Nog story, you do think back to those early seasons when they're kids and they're roaming around the station together. But they've both matured a lot. You know, Nog is a cadet here. Jake, one thing that really stands out to me in this episode, even there as he kisses his father on the head, is just how much Jake has grown, but also how Serac Lofton, who does appear in this episode, by the way, has grown so much as an actor on the show.
Yeah, he really has. I think that he has a lot of good timing in this episode. I think the kind of the looks that he gives, just everything about his demeanor in every place, I think he's really grown. And you can also tell that Aaron Eisenberg, who's playing Nog, has as well. Yeah. They've really come into their own as actors, and which is really good because they are tasked really with carrying this entire episode. And if they weren't working or clicking as actors here, it would be something that would be quite frustrating.
I think Aaron had a shorter distance to go in that respect, though, than Serac Lofton did, because Serac was actually a little boy when the show started. And so for him to grow into being an actor over the course of the show is a little bit different than what was the case with Aaron.
That's true, but you know, when you do have Avery Brooks, who is actually a theater teacher, really becoming like his surrogate father, I think it does a great job here, and you can see the influence of all of these great actors who have spent a ton of time on stage, really rubbing off on him, and
including Armin Shimmerman right here as Quark. Yeah.
Fantastic. I love to. They're talking about all these things that they found, valuable antiques, and Nog's like, it's junk. I mean, who wants a mid 24th century ceramic Romulan water basin? It's slightly cracked. A Tellarite shoe, date unknown.
But you know what it's like, though, is like if you go to a thrift shop or you go to a yard sale, and 99% of everything there is going to be junk, but there's going to be this one priceless gem that the owner has no idea is worth anything that you're going to find.
Well, and exactly here, you know, they come across this Willie Mays rookie card, and immediately Jake knows what he will cheer up his father, you know, just having something like this kind of come into his life. And I love that, you know. I like that you're kind of bringing in this idea of these small, innocuous things that we kind of take for granted. And I think that it really kind of drives home the point of this whole episode of it is those things that we take for granted a lot that really kind of make life worth living, you know?
Well, I like, as a father, I like what Jake says here that, you know, my dad's always doing all of these things for me. I want to do something for him this time because I'm in a stage right now with, you know, my son is a teenager and you're in that stage as a parent where you feel like your kids don't really appreciate everything that you do for them all the time. They're off in their own little world all the time. You ask them to do a simple thing to help out the family and they do it, but you know, there's a little attitude behind it. And watching Jake grow up on the show and seeing that he's now at this point where he's not like, oh, dad, like he was at the beginning in Emissary. Now he's really like, I really appreciate my father. I want to do something for him.
Yeah, and I think that one of the neatest things to see is I think that happens to a lot of us as we grow up. You know, for those, I think our parents kind of raised us well. We do turn into those people who want to give to others. And I love that even Nog, you know, being the Ferengi that he is, you can kind of really see the human rubbing off on him.
So much human influence on him.
Exactly. The fact that he would even consider what Jake is about to ask him, which is, you know, giving up his Latinum to help Captain Sisko. It is very funny to kind of watch these Ferengi characters move closer and closer to what we consider, you know, these 24th century, but even just human values.
You know, he says he has 5 bars of gold press Latinum. And there are, of course, slips and other things. I just picture, like, a bar must be so valuable. Like, you walk up to a bar to get a drink. He's like, give me a root beer. He's like, okay, that's going to be 2 shards. And so he pulls out a bar and just kind of scrapes a little bit off right there on the bar.
Well, Kate, this is one of the most interesting conversations, the whole thing about the humans of giving up money for their, you know, enlightenment, you know, that... And I love that Nog's like, what exactly does that mean? Right. And Jake's like, it just means we don't need money.
That's right. He's
like,
can't give you a better answer than that.
I don't understand. So if you don't need money, then how come you need my money? And I think it's the question that we always ask. How does a, you know, currencyless system actually work?
Right.
And we always come down to it, at least in Star Trek. It doesn't seem like it does because they always end up needing currency.
And I don't think that Star Trek is a moneyless society or any society without currency. Certainly not out here, outside of the Federation and the core worlds. Maybe on Earth, I don't know, but I don't even buy into that. I think that's just been kind of they say it sometimes, but they contradict a lot. I love here how Jake is playing on Nog. So, I mean, if you think, like, who knows Nog the best on the station, it's probably Jake, right? They've been together since they were kids.
Yeah, and the fact that he's just kind of guilting him into it, too. You know, the man who believed in you.
But it gets
him. Got you into Starfleet Academy.
But it gets him, and that's what shows that Nog is a different kind of Ferengi.
Well, and he's still, I mean, he's crossing his arms there, humans, he's frustrated with humans, and yet at the same time, he's very much buying into how they live.
Well, he knows that what Jake says is true, that he owes a lot to Sisko. If it weren't for Sisko, he would not have gone to the Academy.
Right, and I feel like, you know, them both being there at that dinner, they both sense that there's something wrong, and Nog is picking up on it as well. So,
well, here's our favorite character in Deep Space Nine, Kai Winn.
Yes. You know what is most interesting about this entire episode is the way that she and Benjamin interact. She has the only time I think I feel like that she has any respect for him as a character.
Yeah, one of the few.
Maybe
anyway.
In this episode. Now, obviously, we're doing the commentary, and I'm not going and checking anything out. But do you think that, Chris? I mean, just watching this episode, this may be one of the few, if not only time she kind of shows honest respect for who he is. And
I don't know if it's the only time, but this is the most prominent example, I think, of her really seeking him out and having respect and actually listening to him and viewing him as the emissary.
Yeah, and what it made me think a little bit as I was watching the episode, Chris, is how interesting would it have been for her to be on his side throughout? You know, what would that have been like? How would that have changed Deep Space Nine? And I think it would have been a really interesting thing because they actually play off each other pretty well. I mean, them being adversarial, I don't think necessarily was the only way they could have gone. It makes for a great story, but it just made me wonder, just an impossible universe, what would have happened?
Yeah. I think it's important, though, that she, as the religious leader, is not sold on the idea that this outsider is their emissary. I think that makes the show more interesting. But here, you know, what's especially interesting in this episode is that normally in Star Trek, you get an A story that's really serious, and then you get a B story that's fun. And they flip that on its head here, where you've got the A story, which is the really fun comedic story, and the B story is very serious.
Right. Well, because for Sisko, it's like when it rains, it pours in this episode. It just seems to be going from bad to worse. You know, the fact that the Bajorans are going to be meeting with the Dominion, it could it get any worse for him? War orphans fun. This is a fun scene, just them doing the whole auction here and just seeing that. I love on Deep Space Nine, you know, Quark's bar kind of has that Mos Eisley feel sometimes, yeah. You know, and you get all these characters in Star Trek. And I always wish they could have gone a little bit crazier with some of them. Of course, the money. But I just wonder, too, okay, think you're the prop master. And they're like, we need alienish artifacts for a auction that'll probably be on screen maybe two or three times, you know? Man, what a job.
I know. Well, and I love the nod. We often talk about how of all the series, DS9 is the series that actually pays the most homage to the original series, usually through references. Same case here. You know, we never see Andorians in Star Trek after the original series until we get to Enterprise. It's very rare. There's that weird one in TNG in the holodeck. But here we have an Andorian chest. So that could have been any chest. It could have been a Bajoran chest. But no, it's an Andorian chest.
Yeah, it is very nice that they do like to have callbacks to the original series and those characters that we don't see, those aliens that we don't see. And I am always surprised, Chris, that we don't actually see any Andorians on the show. Maybe it was just because they couldn't figure out how to do the antennas.
It could be. Well, I think on TNG it was that desire to stay away from things from the original series, and that just kind of carried over through the rest of Star Trek. And then,
yeah, that's true.
This is, it's so funny here, this very uncomfortable, this guy over in the corner. At this point, you don't know who he is or why he's wanting to bid on this. It's very creepy. You almost get the feeling like he might be a terrorist. And there's something he wants in there that we don't know of. Like maybe that little white egg looking thing is actually something he was supposed to pick up for someone.
Yeah, it does give you a very ominous feel here. Yeah. What I love is that this scene as well, you know, Nog is trying to find a way to get past. Okay, we didn't get the card. How can we cheer up your dad? And it is kind of an interesting thing here. They're showing you, you know, Jake's obsession with this, with the doctor's obsession with his trying to, you know, regenerate his cells. Yeah. And kind of playing off of that and kind of what we'll do to get the things that we want.
Cellular bored. Your body gets bored just doing the same thing for years and years and years.
Yeah. So awesome. But you mentioned this before, and this is what I think is really interesting. Jake is driven by not an obsession to get a card, but to find a way to help his dad. And he feels like his dad needs something right now. It's the time in his life when he's the down the most, and he needs his father.
I love here. So. Morn is walking out with this painting. The story behind this painting is hilarious, that Ronald D. Moore had a black velvet Elvis in his office, and he wanted to find a black velvet painting, and it was so hard to find because they don't make them anymore. They're really hard to find. And then it turns out that the first flag of the Martian colony was made on black velvet. I haven't broken
any laws. Chris, now I always wondered too is why we never got a follow up on the Soulless Minions Orthodoxy.
I know. Isn't that an awesome name?
That would have been great. Man, that huge Dominion ship pulling up to the station. It's huge.
When I assign colors to the different series, if I have to color code them somehow, I always make DS9 purple, and people always ask me why, and it's because of the Jem'Hadar ships and the purple glow. I feel like there is a lot of purple used in DS9 that you don't notice as much, but that hue is just kind of there. Really, even in the uniforms, there's a, you know, they have the sort of purplish gray tinge to them.
Yeah, and I think it has to do with the lighting. Mm-hmm. What I love here is Sisko's dressing down of Weyoun. Yeah. I don't like you. I'm not going to pretend to like you. So let's just get down to business because I'm having a hard time talking to you right now. He's just so matter of fact. I mean, mm-hmm. Picard never would have done that. You know, I don't think I necessarily would even say Janeway do that or even Kirk do that, but Sisko, he's just blunt.
Picard would be really, really nice to the guy unless he was a Bolian scientist who he met at a seminar in the past and he doesn't want to talk to him.
That is true. That's in 10 minutes. Let's go.
So now this starts the cool part of this episode where they go on this chase of having to obtain things to try to ultimately get the baseball card.
But not before they find out what this doctor is up to, which has to be the most fun part. I mean, it's just ludicrous. And how many times have you not run across? I mean, Chris, you're flipping channels in the middle of the night. This just seems like something you would run across.
Right.
As you flip channels at, you know, like 3 o'clock in the morning.
And don't touch anything. So if you notice the...
Your cell's bored? Don't you want to keep them entertained so you don't die?
That's right.
We'll try our new, you know, whatever.
Guaranteed to keep your cells entertained for 7 days or your money back.
That's right. Oh, man. Well, and then I love this, too. They're like, this guy, he's been doing his research. He knows who they are now. And he's like, oh, I'm willing to open to some negotiations on this. What I love, Chris, here is if you're looking real careful, and I've seen this episode so many times, this little console that he's working on, those Lacars are actually from the 23rd century movie.
Yeah, from the Undiscovered Country.
Era. Which I love,
Enterprise A,
you know, that
and, Excelsior.
Yes, that light blue and the greens. Yes. Those were fantastic Lacars, if you ask me.
Well, if you think about it, timing wise, from the Undiscovered Country to this episode, it's not that many years in between. So when they reuse props, that's something that was still around and they could pull in.
Wait a minute. Oh yeah, definitely. As well, you know. Lacar technology, you know, what's inside could get upgraded, but you know, the functionality of the panels, it doesn't necessarily need to change. So.
And you, of course, are talking about the interface, not Lacar, the very popular, very small car from the 1980s.
Exactly.
It's not very technologically advanced.
Yeah. No. That or the new iOS 8, we're not discussing that. We're just talking about the Star Trek interface here, so.
I love their reaction to his explanation of what is going on. They're kind of like, okay, sure. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I love that he said that death is nothing more than the case of cellular boredom.
That's right. Like, your cells just get bored.
Your cells are bored.
So this big white egg-shaped thing in here is very interesting because they talked about it. Laura Richards talks about it and says that she saw it at Modern Props and thought, well, that's kind of an interesting object. I have no idea what we would ever use it for, but kept it in mind. And then it turns out that it was just the perfect shape and everything for Dr. Geiger's cellular regeneration and entertainment chamber.
And it's the entertainment that's the really important thing there, Chris, because, you know, just regenerating yourselves isn't enough. We need to keep them entertained. But it makes me wonder, how do you entertain these cells? Well, I mean, do you show them funny videos of Laurel and Hardy? Or
I don't know. I feel like this might be something that originated actually with Michael Jackson. You remember he used to sleep in that little chamber, and he also had a monkey. Don't know if the monkey slept in the chamber with him or not, but that could be one of the earliest entertainment chambers of this type.
Very true, and I believe that monkey is also the monkey from Resolutions.
Oh, this explains so much.
It really does, doesn't it? Yeah, we need to tell Tristan.
The cellular regeneration and entertainment chamber.
Entertainment chamber. And Jake's like reaction
the,
is like,
the
what?
The look on Sirach's face. What? Like, it's perfect.
It is excellent.
Perfect.
So good. This guy is just... But...
It gives uplifting and entertaining messages. So does that mean that they listen to Joel Osteen all day? Because I hope not. I think that might kill my cells.
You will never grow old.
You will never grow old. They're like, let's just get the card from him and get out of here before he puts us in that chamber. And he's a little crazy.
Nothing less than immortality itself.
So, you know, we thought, okay, who is this guy? Is he like a terrorist? What is he? And it just turns out that he's not just a mad scientist. He's a crazy scientist. Who's pretty harmless in the end,
right,
as well.
Right, exactly. You know why his name is Geiger, right?
For the Geiger counter?
No.
That's
Ronald D. Moore had to find something. He had to find a name that rhymed with tiger because he has the joke where Nog says lions, tigers, and bears.
Oh my.
So,
oh goodness.
Yeah.
That's funny. That is really funny.
He was adamant that that joke remain in the episode, even though like everyone else in the writer's room thought it was terribly cheesy and shouldn't remain in the episode. Really wanted it to stay in there. And the doctor's name had to rhyme with tiger to make it pay off. So it came up with the name Geiger.
It actually works. I think it is really funny. I laugh at that joke every time I hear it. And I've seen this episode a lot of times. So Ronald D. Moore, thank you so much.
Well, I like the way that they stretch it out so that it's not quite as corny as it could be. If they just said it quickly, then it would have been a little more corny. But they pace it pretty well. I love this here, too, where O'Brien at some point's got to be like, just get to the point, Nog. What is it? What do you want me to do?
Right, right. Well, and what I love here, too, is Nog's like, look, let me teach you about, you know, incentive economics. Let me show you how this works. And Nog really is so good at this stuff.
But you're not giving him any reason to help us.
Well, and it is funny because, again, we're really challenging that whole no currency thing, but in a completely different way. Like, Jake doesn't have any idea on how to, you know, trade with somebody. You do this for me and I'll do this for you. You know, it's not just about being nice, but it also has to do with, you know, helping each other out. You know, that's kind of how our world works. And I think it is so funny. He won't tell them exactly what he needs and why he needs it, so they do have to jump through all these hoops.
Right. Exactly. I'm picturing now, like, if you want to get that new iPhone that you want, Matthew, but you get it in the same way that they are doing this, where you start going around and asking different people for this so you can pass it on to someone else and pass it on. That's, if we talk about an economy that has no money, how would that work? Would we all be doing something like that just to get things we want? I guess if we had replicators,
goodness,
it wouldn't matter, right?
Yeah, and I mean, but even that, you know, like on a starship, you have replicator rations. You can't just be replicating
things
ad nauseam.
Well, you do on Voyager, but you don't really otherwise, do you?
I don't know. That's something that I could never figure out.
It was something
out.
They implemented, you know, because they could not necessarily replenish their energy reserves the way that you could on a regular starship.
Yeah, and that does make me wonder, though. So can you just sit there and replicate, you know, shirt upon shirt upon shirt upon shirt?
I don't like this one. I don't like the. Yeah. It would be like the assignment Earth comics that we did. Where she's in the closet trying to change.
I
don't know.
Is it? I love that that the scene here, Jake is going to try and do the whole Nog thing. Wouldn't you rather be somewhere else? And Dr. Bashir's like, no.
No, this is my life. My work's my life. I want to be
right here. Yeah, exactly. This is my vacation. I'm working on a really important study.
It's a good thing that Scotty is not the engineer because they would have never, Scotty would have had the same reaction. Like, no, these are my engines. Why would I want to be anywhere else?
At least O'Brien was like basically doing maintenance work, you know, like recalibrating some sort of EPS something. So it wasn't like he was working on, you know, the innards of Deep Space Nine. He was just doing basically grunt work because somebody had gotten sick. A Kukulaka. A Kuka what?
Kukulaka.
This is funny, too. To get this bear, it wasn't just any bear. They actually had a bear lineup in the writer's room with like 20-something bears that were all brought in so they could pick the bear that was going to be in the episode.
That's really funny. Well, and it what I love is that they are referencing the fact that they had dated.
Yeah.
And, you know, they're just going back in time and talking. These two characters had dated, and yep, she stole his stuffed animal.
And the fact that the bear was established already, I think it's in The Quickening, isn't it, where they mention Makukulaka. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they didn't just create a stuffed animal out of thin air that belonged to Julian for them to go get either.
Right, and just the fact that they remember all that is awesome. And I love the way that Nog steals this from her. He creeps into her room at night, which is super creepy. Yeah. And steals it from her while she is asleep. Like that, Nog's crossing a line there.
Yeah, that is pretty creepy. All right, so here we switch to the very serious part of the episode with Sisko and Kai Winn.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it is a great conversation between them talking about this idea of how do we keep Bajor safe? Yeah. And you told us not to join the Federation months back, and we are very much alone, so what do we do? And I feel like what is bringing them together, and this is why I think why they are kind of clicking so much in this episode, is that they do have the very same agenda, which is to find a way to keep Bajor safe. And I think at this point, Kai Winn knows that enough about Sisko that what he desires is Bajor being safe and
right,
taking care of Bajor. And
we talk about how they're interacting with each other here in this episode. And of course, what happened in Rapture did help Winn to feel like maybe Sisko's for real. And I think it's important to note that on the timeline, this episode, the events of this episode are happening about 6 months after Rapture.
I can't make that kind of promise.
Well, and two, the gravity of this conversation, he can't promise that they can take care of Bajor in the way that she's mentioning, you know, that no Jem'Hadar soldier would ever be on Bajoran soil, that, you know, we won't end up basically a casualty of war.
Well, I think it's important, too, that, I mean, you can never guarantee that. I mean, during the Dominion War, Beta Zed is overrun, for example. Ryza is overrun. Those are within Federation space. You can never guarantee that. But what she's getting at here, too, I think, is filling out how the Federation really feels about Bajor, because she's comparing it to other worlds, including Earth. Like, will you protect us the same as those worlds? And he says, you know, I can't guarantee that. And she knew that. I mean, she said, I wouldn't have believed you if you said you would.
To guide us through troubled times.
Well, and two, I love that she's feeling inadequate for this decision. She's asked the prophets. She doesn't feel like she's getting any answers. She doesn't know what way to go. And she asks them point blank, what do you think we should do? And I love that she actually takes his advice.
That's the important thing here, that shows the progression of their relationship, is that she actually is asking.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, his advice is not unreasonable. He says, I just, I have this feeling that it's not the time to act or to move just yet, and we need to keep Bajor's options completely open, no matter what way that that means going. And I really like that. And I like too that he just stresses, I need you to trust me this time. And you really do sense that she is going to trust him. I do love that she grabs his ear to check his paw, and he has that reflex in his neck of like, get off my ear, you know, that he still doesn't really like that. Maybe it's just her doing it, which it probably is.
I'm sure that has something to do with it. Yeah.
There's a part of him that maybe even now is still a little uncomfortable with being the emissary.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's not so much that someone's touching his ear, but that specifically reminds him of the role that he has within the Majoran religion that he's still not comfortable with, but he's growing more comfortable with it. He's all refreshed. We're back here.
I like that he's like, refreshed, mildly entertained.
Mildly entertained.
I get a little bored after 5 hours.
Well, wait, Geiger, so he says you're supposed to be in this thing. For those who aren't watching along, Geiger just climbed out of his entertainment chamber.
So he says you're supposed to be in there for 8 hours a day. Is it like 8 hours a day when you sleep?
I think
or
so.
Or do you have to be awake in there for 8 hours?
You know, I have a feeling that it would be while you're sleeping, it stimulates your brain in an entertaining way.
Okay, let's hope so, because otherwise, man, if you're having to just lie awake in a shell for, you know, eight hours.
And then sleep 8 hours on top of that. Well, that's 16 hours of your day gone. You've only got 10 hours left if you're on Bajor.
Well, at least you have 10 hours. Yeah. I mean, here you'd be just screwed. I love that Wei Yun is, his room is right above Geiger's room, and he's like listening through the floor.
It's like they're in a hotel.
What's going on
in
below
Vegas?
Him.
They're like, what's going on down there?
Yeah, exactly.
Now this part is really funny. What they've decided to do here, what they've agreed to do, is Nog is going to filter out subharmonic distortions from Worf's Klingon opera as the next step in their chase for the baseball card.
And I get the feeling too that I don't know if it has anything to do with it. Jake is working on this speech for Kira, and I'm kind of wondering if somehow that plays into it as well, that they're both trying to do things that they're to get done, you know, to get this baseball card somehow. And Noggs just happens to be very obnoxious having to listen to it so loud.
But at least they're using their skills, right? Jake is an aspiring writer. Nog is a Ferengi, has great hearing. So it makes sense. They've chosen tasks that they're kind of selling their skills, basically, in exchange for the next thing they need.
I love that when he's like, yeah, water reclamation has been considered such a dry subject. Is that funny? And Nog's like, no.
You can tell he's a young writer at this point, right?
Yes.
Would you watch it with that thing?
I like too at this point that they're both exasperated with each other. Uh-huh. Like this has not been an enjoyable experience for either of them, and they're just ready to be done because I feel like they're ready to spend some time apart.
At this point, it's like the momentum is just carrying them along, right? Instead of saying, like, let's just forget the baseball card, which they could do, it's like they've picked up speed and they're rolling down a hill and they can't stop now.
And I like that they walk into the room and everything is gone. Like, that room was just jam-packed full of, you know, equipment. And now it's just completely gone.
The mysterious Dr. Geiger.
And his soulless minions of orthodoxy. And I love that Odo's like,
who?
Who?
You know, the SMOs. Like,
he has no idea. Everything that they say just sounds like gibberish to him. Oh, gosh.
And Nog is nodding like, yeah, yeah, that's right, Jay. Yeah.
Exactly. The only thing that Odo can say is, uh-huh.
Do you really think he's going to charge us with filing false reports, obstructing justice,
being the fact licenses? That Jake thinks somehow that Kai Winn is involved with this guy's disappearance is just hysterical. And it is, it just goes to show Jake does get a little bit overzealous in this whole baseball card thing, because the fact that he would think that Kai has anything to do with this at all, like that she would care about a cellular regeneration, you know, chamber, is pretty funny.
Well, but they come to the realization that there was a Bajoran
Vedic.
Well, there is the Vedic there, yes, but there was a Bajoran mandala that he thinks
that's why
Kai had sent the Vedic to get it, and that the Vedic is working for her. I think it also shows that, like we viewers, Jake also sees Kai Winn as a bit of a villain, and who knows what she's actually up to.
Yeah, and I think that that's interesting too, because that reminder of kind of who the characters see her as, and then her reactions mm-hmm. throughout the episode, especially in towards Benjamin, it's just not what you're expecting. Right. And I like that,
so that
they're
makes
giving
really
you
suspicious.
The unexpected.
Yeah.
Right.
Now, face-to-face Kai Winn and Wei Yun. I love this.
I'm afraid I cannot reveal my recommendations to
that's a lot of evil in one corridor.
It's also a lot of the super fake smile, be nice to each other from both sides.
Yeah, I do love that. It is great. I love that Wei Yun is just buttering her up like crazy. I just love that we have so much in common. And she feels his ear and she's like,
Nope.
Not at all.
With a big, huge smile. And she's practically laughing when she says it.
And Wei Yun walks off with a smile. Those two guys just staying in there. So, Kai Winn.
We need to talk.
Benjamin.
Oh, gosh.
You accused the Kai? What are you thinking?
Because I'm not laughing.
And then what Jake comes up with, we were at the bar and we were drunk. Like, you're not helping yourself at all, Jake.
Jake!
I guess we got a little drunk.
What?
Oh, goodness.
Drunk. I see that my face.
Well, and two, they tell him that, you know, Jake tells him that they got drunk. And then I think one of the worst things that could happen to both of them is that he says, my trust has been misplaced in you, you know, and I don't think either of them wants to hear that, because they both have a fondness, obviously Jake does for his father, but, you know, Nog also has a real soft spot for the captain as well.
We'll also remember that the whole storyline is about Jake trying to do something nice for his father, and in the process of trying to do something nice for his father, he makes a boneheaded move, accusing the Kai, gets in trouble with his dad, makes up a lie to try to cover that up, which makes it worse. And now his father's telling him that I've lost trust in you, when all Jake's trying to do is to try to make his father happy.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of get
and worst of all, he ends up on a Dominion ship. Right.
See, now, like, when we talked about how I didn't really like this episode when it first came on and when I've seen it a few times after, this always seemed sort of out of the blue. Because I wasn't paying close attention to the storyline, the Bajoran Dominion pack storyline. And so when they get beamed to a Jem'Hadar ship, it's suddenly like, why? That was sort of back in the day when I'm not really analyzing the show as much. And so I think this episode can kind of lose people in that respect.
He had a baseball card that I wanted to...
Well, and yeah, as I'm watching it now, I completely get the fact why Wei Yun, you know, obviously they're in talks with Bajor, and therefore they are watching everything on this station like hawks, trying to make sure and figure out what's going to happen. And they've picked up all of these, you know, signals that people meeting each other. And then, of course, it just doesn't look good. and the story that Jake comes up with is just freaking fantastic about Willie Mays and the fact that he's a time traveler. Oh gosh, it's just wonderful. Yeah,
use your enemy's ignorance of your own culture against them, right?
Met with you immediately after leaving.
Well, yeah, exactly.
I suggest that you stop playing games with me and tell me the truth.
Willie Mays, the time traveler, that is really awesome. This is all
just a mistake. Well, and this, what's funny is that the story that Jake comes up with would actually be a crazy, fun, like 40s style. You know, 50s style sci-fi story, you know, like that Willie Mays is a baseball player that he's famous, but no, actually he was a time traveler.
So I guess to Geiger, is the Dominion, are they the soulless minions of Orthodoxy?
So,
I feel like that he thinks of them like that, but I think he feels like anybody in authority that might stop his research.
Just anyone, okay. So it could be the Bajoran religious establishment. It could be the Dominion.
Right, exactly.
At first he thought it was Jake and Nog.
In the end, Weyoun is going to be very excited about his idea of cellular entertainment and regeneration.
Oh, yeah. We weren't supposed to divulge this, but since you left us no choice...
We're working for Starfleet Intelligence. And I love that the Nog goes, oh, no.
It reminds me of the great moments in Voyager where Tom Paris would make up a story. And everyone would be like, oh,
that
no.
That man, one Willie Mays, did not exist in any historical documents. Then, in the blink of an eye...
He really does... I think what is funny about the scene, too, is you can tell that Jake kind of has that flair for storytelling,
exactly,
you know, because it really is a fun story. I feel like this would be a great, you know, pulp.
I think it should be
sci-fi
an
novel.
E-novella, an UDS9 E-novella. I think Dayton Ward should write it.
Yes. In the vein of, you know, Captain Proton, except it's Willie Mays, time traveler.
Exactly.
We need that card.
The entire future of the galaxy may rest on us tracking down Willie Mays and stopping him. Well, and this is where I think we were talking about earlier how Sarak had grown as an actor. Yeah. His delivery in all of this is great. Mm-hmm. It really is. It just sells everything.
Yes. He does a good job in here.
That is, I believe, your first story.
I like that Wayne's like, no, I believe the first story that you're just trying to give your dad a gift, and that's it.
You're very wise.
You're very wise.
Still leaves the question what you were doing beneath my quarters.
He's harmless. He's just working on a way to become immortal.
This is what I love, is that really the crazy person in here is Dr. Geiger. And Weyoun is really ready to believe him because he's working on immortality.
Let me ask you a simple question. Do you want to die?
There's the question again. I liked it earlier when Jake and Nog were in his quarters and he asks them, do you want to die? And Nog's like, no. Duh.
I really liked this scene. You know, just Sisko talking about how something has changed on the station. Mm-hmm. And what I loved is that it was somebody going through kind of unnoticed being altruistic to people. And that's what you need when people are down, you know, when things are going bad. You just need somebody to do something good for you. And it could be just the smallest things. And I really liked that about this episode because they are about to have everything hit the fan next episode. Overthinking
this. Maybe the real explanation Warp's happy is with his opera there. Something my father taught me a long time. Yeah, Weyoun is going to take the entertainment chamber for a spin.
This has to be the coolest baseball card display I've ever seen, too. Yeah. Like, it has the little light in it. It kind of light.
You know, it's 24th century.
Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah. You want me to get you one like that for your baseball that you keep in your hand when we're recording the orb?
That would be great. That, or if you could get me the actual holder that was on the desk, right. That would have been fantastic.
By the way, everyone listening, this is actually true. Matthew does record the orb with a baseball in his hand.
I do a lot of times, and it's on my desk, and I just tend to play with it a lot, and especially when we're recording the orb, it just feels right to have a baseball in my hand and channel the Cisco.
Exactly. Well, there's the episode. I have to say thank you to Greg Mollenby for recommending this, because you made me go back and watch In the Cards for the first time in a long time, and I have to say, it's not at the top of my list as my favorite DS9 episodes of all time, but definitely I have a new appreciation for this episode, Matthew.
Yeah, I do too, Chris. I think it has a lot going for it. It's a lot of fun, but it also is caring for that story, Chris. And I think that's one of the things that Deep Space Nine does really well. In some way, almost always an episode is carrying forth some thread of storyline. And I really enjoy this episode. In fact, I enjoy it a lot more rewatching it this time than I have before. So thanks so much, Greg, for making us watch it, because now it's an episode I might just go back and pop in because of all of this fun, just randomly.
And, connections that we talked about Jake saying this, but there are great little things in here with Ronald D. Moore working on this episode, that when Jake is explaining to Nog about money, he is actually quoting Picard from First Contact, which was, a cool little connection there as well. And then in setting things up, this whole bit about the non-aggression pact with the Dominion and everything that's going on with Wynn and Sisko here really is setting things up for the sixth season. As you said earlier, Matthew, it's all going to hit the fan in the next episode. And in Call to Arms, they actually do sign that non-aggression pact.
Well, and in the end, too, it's what keeps Bajor safe throughout the war. Yeah. And it is, I think it was one of the coolest ways of kind of dealing with the fact that how do you keep Bajor from just getting, decimated in this war, as they've come out of, the occupation and they're trying to rebuild their civilization. If they had been on the front lines in this war, in that way, they would have just been gone.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. No chance. Absolutely. So to close out here, Matthew, we of course have a tradition here on the Orb of me asking you who did not appear in this episode. Well, clearly, Serac Lofton does appear in this episode. So who does not appear in this episode?
Dax does not appear in this episode.
That's right. Terry Farrell does not appear in this episode. Congratulations, Serac. You're off the hook this week. All right. Well, this was really fun, Matthew, to go through this episode, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network this past week. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
And, we were so busy, we didn't eat, all day. I had a Red Bull around 5 o'clock, right before the parsecs. I could feel my teeth, tingling.
Yeah, yeah.
It was weird.
Earl Grey.
He was robbing the bokle, as they say it in Klingon, as a Klingon word I just made up, just so you know.
I think we can tell.
The Orb.
What I also liked, too, was that Nog said, put that in there, too, to Jake, and let people decide. And that just summed up DS9 for me, because DS9 is, we're not going to tell you for sure he's a bad captain, even though, obviously, I think most people would agree that he was.
To the journey!
Oh yeah, B'Elanna's reading romantic fanfic.
Not everything is fanfic, okay? This
yes,
could
it
be
is.
A legitimate author with a legitimate publisher.
No, this is Klingon Harlequin. You know it is.
Warp 5.
The Orions, there's something really complex going on within their society, and there's a long-term struggle where the women have flipped the table on the men. And how does that all play out? And it's something where I wish Enterprise had gone for 7 seasons and they could have continued to revisit this and we find out more and more.
The Ready Room.
You know, people have seen that image. That image in particular, just that still of her with the Desi Lu logo over it, is really iconic. Mm-hmm. And in fact, what I discovered is it's not a still. It's probably 26 different stills.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
A number of scenes from especially the end of Into Darkness are sort of lifted and adapted from Wrath of Khan to be used in this story.
Lifted and Google translated into this version.
Literary Treks.
We all know Troy gets all the men that come on, the all the envoys, actually. You notice that she really likes these bad boy envoy men, you know?
She does.
Continuing mission.
How is Spock changing? How is he changed from the moment he met Captain Kirk from the non-mirror universe? What is his ultimate goal?
Axanar, the official podcast.
So basically, you've got this souped-up computer with this lens on the front of it, and because the resolution has increased so much with these cameras, the amount of data coming out of that camera is enormous.
And join us in welcoming aboard Mission Log, a Roddenberry Star Trek podcast.
I'm really, really glad that you mentioned Parliament Funkadelic. I could not watch this at all without thinking about George Clinton.
Yeah, so, and just every time he talks about going to Parliament, I'm like, yeah.
Yeah, who wouldn't want to go?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. We have new Trek Talk for you every day of the week, and you can get it in all the places you get your podcasts. We're all over the place. Personally, I get my podcasts through iTunes. We're very pleased to now be a featured provider in iTunes, so you can find us right up there with the biggest networks. It's really a great thing for me. You know, I spent 4.5 years building this network, so I'm really honored to now be a featured provider. And you can support us in iTunes by going over and hitting the subscribe button on the orb. The way iTunes works, the way that you rise up to the top, it does depend on how many lifetime subscribers you have as well as reviews. So we would love for you to go over there and do that, you know, either through iTunes or through the podcasts app on iOS, however you get your podcasts through Apple. Please go over and hit subscribe. And while you're there, also, please leave a review of The Orb for us. We love to hear what you think about the show, and that also helps us rise up there and helps other DS9 fans find the show as they're looking around. Matthew, while we're talking about ways people can help us, we'd also like to tell everyone about Patreon. Patreon is a lot like Kickstarter, but instead of supporting a single project, you can actually support the creatives that you love on a monthly basis. So you set an amount that you'd like to contribute to Trek FM, and that becomes recurring, and we have lots of perks for you. And in fact, one of the perks that you can get is associate producer credit on the show. And we now have 3 associate producers here on the Orb, Matthew, and those are Norman C. Lau, Ruth Ward, and Lisa Stevens. So we really thank them for their support of the network and the Orb and helping us create great DS9 talk for everyone.
Yeah, guys, I just got to say, thank you so much. We really do appreciate it. Without you, this network just wouldn't be the same. Having support from listeners who have been here with us for a very long time means a great deal to Chris and I. And the fact that you are just helping support us continue to bring the Orb to you. It has been so fun to be doing the Orb for over a year now with you, Chris. It's just been a joy to be able to talk about our favorite Star Trek series. And we just appreciate you guys helping us out so we can continue to do that for you.
Definitely. Yeah, way over a year, Matthew. It's been over a year and a half, I think. So,
goodness, time flies when you're having fun on the station.
It really does. It really does. So thank you for your support there, Norm, Ruth, and Lisa. And we have 24 patrons right now all together. Now, I know we have way more than 24 listeners out there, and we could really use your support as well. So go over to patreon.com/trekafilm. That's patreon.com/trekafilm. And check out our goals, check out our milestones and the different perks that you get in exchange. You can set any amount that you'd like to contribute. And your support makes a huge difference in our ability to keep the shows coming to you every week. All right. So if you'd like to share your thoughts on In the Cards, you can do that in a variety of ways. You can go to trek.fm/contact, use the form there, choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. You can also find us in social media. Trek.fm is our username on Twitter. Facebook.com/trek.fm is the main Trek.fm page there. And we also have a new group on Facebook. It is a closed discussion group called the Babel Conference, and it's closed because it's a replacement for the forums that used to be on our website, and it's designed for all you guys, everyone listening. It's our listeners' discussion group. It's there to foster meaningful and respectful discussion about Star Trek, and we hope you'll join us over there. Just go to Facebook and type the Babel Conference into the search bar, or go to our website and click on discussion up on the menu bar. That'll take you right over there. Just click join the group. That'll come to me, and I will approve that and let you in, hand you your delegate credentials for the Babel Conference. And the discussion is really taking off over there. We've got a lot of stuff going on. So I hope you'll join us over there. So Matthew, when you're not running around, you know, looking for those Star Trek collector's cards that you've been wanting to get your hands on, doing favors for everyone so you can finally get that very limited edition Beverly Crusher card, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, you can find me obviously here on the Orb. You can also find me at MattRushing02 there on Twitter. You can also find me on Literary Treks, talking books and comics with you for the Star Trek universe. And I am also at my own personal blog, 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not curled up with Kukulaka trying to get yourself to go to sleep before the Dominion invades again, where can we find you?
Now, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, the letter C and Brian with a Y. You can also find me on Facebook, facebook.com/CBrianJones, and on my website, cbrianjones.com. Elsewhere on the network, of course, I do Literary Treks with Matthew, as we mentioned. I also do a lot of other shows, Warp 5, The Ready Room, Continuing Mission, Matterstream Hyperchannel, and the official podcast of Star Trek Axanar, which I co-host with Axanar creator Alec Peters. So go check all of those out if you want to find out what else I'm talking about in the Star Trek universe. And before we let you go, we would also like to remind you about our sponsor for today's show, Audible.com. They're the absolute best source for audiobooks that you're going to find anywhere. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice just for trying Audible. Go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. They have a lot of Star Trek books there, including many of my favorites like Federation and Prime Directive, but they also have lots of books across all the other genres as well. I don't know if I mentioned it here on this show before, but there's one called Year Zero by Rob Reed, which is a hilarious science fiction story about how the rest of the universe owes Earth so much money and royalties for stealing our music that they basically have to destroy Earth in order to prevent their own civilization from collapsing.
Awesome.
So I highly recommend that as well. It's a great book. So go check it out. audibletrial.com/trekfm is the URL, and we really appreciate their support of the show and the network.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time as we gaze into the orb.